Did you know you can listen to all your favorite podcasts, including this one, free on Spotify? And beginning August 2nd, Spotify is going to become the exclusive home for all past and future episodes of Dissect. That means wherever you're listening right now, Dissect will no longer be available after August 2nd. So it's more important than ever that you download the free Spotify app on your phone, search for Dissect, and tap the follow button to get new episodes right in your library. You can even binge the entire Yeezus season for free right now. So download Spotify for free today and never miss a new episode of Dissect. When creating an album, every artist is inevitably confronted with the same question. What's the first song? An album's first song sets a tone. It's an indication of a world the listener is stepping into. If we enjoy the first song, we're more likely to continue listening with an open mind. If we're turned off, we're waiting for the rest of the album to win us over. It changes our expectations, perception, and listening experience immediately. Kanye West is hyper-aware of these unavoidable dynamics. When creating Yeezus, Kanye knew that Blood on the Leaves, the song that ended up being a fan favorite, would have made a very successful first song.
Blood on the Leaves. I just need to clear my mind now. It's been racing since the summertime. Free. Now I'm holding down the summer now.
Free. Originally, Blood on the Leaves was supposed to be first.
Wow.
And which psychologically I know would have changed certain Yeezus naysayers about the album, but it wasn't that time for me.
So I'ma need a little more time now.
Blood on the Leaves is everything we expect from a first song, and more importantly, it's everything we expect from Kanye West. It's a virtuosic showcase of Kanye's production abilities. It's high energy and high emotion. Kanye was right. It would have made a great first song. Most of us would have been pleased. But in 2013, Kanye wasn't aiming to please. He was aiming to confront. He wasn't trying to give us what we wanted, but instead, what we needed.
This episode is brought to you by Cars.com. When you add your car to your garage on Cars.com, you'll unlock access to real-time insights into how much your car is worth. Plus, view its historical and projected value to decide when to sell. So when the time is right, you can secure an instant offer from a local dealership or sell it yourself on Cars.com. Start tracking your car's value with your garage on Cars.com. This episode is brought to you by Jiffy Lube. Cars can be a big investment, so it's important to take care of them. I once got a car that I started out with 25,000 miles on. I got it to over 200,000 miles because I took care of it. You know how you take care of a car? You take care of the maintenance, the oil, the brakes, all that stuff. And if you don't, you can have a car just completely fall apart. When your car needs maintenance, head to Jiffy Lube. They provide automotive excellence at speed. Get your oil changed, brakes checked, tons of other multi-care services. It's all done by expertly trained technicians who actually care about taking care of you and your car. Jiffy Lube, car more. To find coupons and start an instant online estimate, visit JiffyLube.com.
From Spotify, I'm Cole Kushner, and this is Dissect, long-form musical analysis broken into short, digestible episodes. Today, we kick off our song-by-song analysis of Yeezus with its notorious opening track, On Sight. As you know from our last episode, Kanye's confrontational attitude exhibited on Yeezus was born from the events that transpired between 2010's My Beautiful Dark Twisted Fantasy and 2013's Yeezus. Instead of becoming the humbled, apologetic artist everyone wanted him to be after the Taylor Swift incident, Kanye came to embrace his true polarizing nature and challenge the status quo. In interview after interview in the Yeezus era, he spoke aggressively about his inability to break into the fashion world, about hitting a glass ceiling as a creative, about society's mental enslavement to corporations, and about stretching the boundaries of hip-hop.
Well, I've reached a point in my life where my Truman Show boat has hit the painting, and I've got to a point that Michael Jackson did not break down. I have reached the glass ceiling as a creative person, as a celebrity. When I say that, it means I want to do product. I am a product person. and I've been at it for 10 years, and I look around, I say, wait a second, there's no one around here in this space that looks like me. And if they are, they're quiet as fuck. So that means, wait a second, now we're seriously like in a civil rights movement. Like
people used to. Musically, Kanye channeled his frustration into Yeezus. From the very opening moments, the album seeks to confront. This now iconic opening synth note introduces us into the world of Yeezus, a world filled with anger and frustration. By Kanye's own admission, this opening was intentionally confrontational.
I'm not trying to regurgitate myself. I showed people that I understand how to make perfect. You know, Dark Fantasy could be considered to be perfect. You know, I say, I know how to make perfect, but that's not what I'm here to do. I'm here to crack the pavement and make new grounds, you know, sonically and society, culturally. For me, as Kanye West, I got to fuck shit up. Taking 1,000 meetings, attempting to get like backing to do clothing and different things like that, and like getting no headway whatsoever, you know, because, you know, and it was just that level of frustration. And that's what, you know, this is what frustration fucking sounds like.
Yeezus's opening synth note, along with the rest of the production of On Sight, was composed by legendary French electronic duo Daft Punk, the most high profile of the album's many collaborators. According to Kanye, Daft Punk's synth was the size of an entire wall, and the original beat for On Sight was over 14 minutes long. That grimy, distorted synth note was picked out of this long original and placed in the front, giving us the now iconic opening moment of Yeezus. It turns out this synth note was more like a siren, warning us of things to come. Because when that synth fades away, we get an equally jarring beat, if we can even call it that. In Western popular music, there are three basic things we expect as an audience: a steady rhythm, functional harmony, and a catchy melody. On Sight gives us absolutely none of this, and given that Kanye stated that he was intentionally looking to confront with this song, we have every reason to believe that the track's subversion of everything we expect from music was absolutely intentional. Let's dissect exactly how Kanye did this, piece by piece. We'll start with rhythm, the backbone of hip-hop. The drum beat itself actually isn't so unusual. Here it is in isolation. What makes this drum beat pretty standard is the fact that the beats fall where we typically expect them to. Specifically, I want you to notice how the snare drum falls on beats 2 and 4. 1, 2, 3, 4. 1, 2, 3, 4. Again, this is very standard stuff. 2 and 4 are where the snare drum usually falls. But a few things complicate this. First, the drums are so distorted and thin that you can barely make them out in the song. And this allows the commanding synth riff that's stacked on top of these drums to completely dominate the track. And the thing is, the synth is playing a completely different rhythm than what the drums are playing. Here's the opening riff in isolation. The synth is playing all offbeats or upbeats, and that high note, it's so prominent compared to everything else, especially the thin, distorted drums. So our ears almost hear that high note as a snare drum, except it's falling in the wrong place. It falls in between beats 2 and 3. So we have the actual snare drum and this synth note competing for rhythmic dominance, and they're clashing, creating a tense musical foundation for the track. This is what's known as rhythmic dissonance. Our ears kind of struggle to find the beat as the synth and the drums don't line up together like we expect them to, especially in a hip-hop song, where a head-nodding beat is typically highly prioritized. And to this point, another thing we expect in a hip-hop song is low, trunk-rattling bass. Yeah, On Sight gives us none of that. The closest thing we have to a low bass is the deep sludge of muffled distortion that happens midway through the verse, when the synth lays into its low register. Another thing we expect from a traditional Western song is harmony. Harmony usually comes from an instrument like a piano or guitar playing chords. For example, here's Kanye's Dark Fantasy, the opening track from the album just prior to Yeezus. We get an abundance of harmony from the piano chords and the orchestral strings, as well as lush harmonies from the vocal choir. Compared to Dark Fantasy, On Sight is the opposite end of the harmonic spectrum. There's little to no harmony. The synth riff only plays two notes, beginning with a low A followed by another A an octave higher. These two A's are followed by a B-flat, which is followed by the last note in the riff, another A, only this one's much higher. Now here's the riff in full on piano. The interval between the two notes in this riff, an A and a B-flat, is what's known as a minor second, which is the most dissonant interval we have in Western music. Here's what they sound like when played simultaneously. Pretty gross, right? This is the same interval from the infamous Jaws score, which is used to create tension around an approaching shark. Just like Jaws' approaching shark, the minor second interval is used throughout On Sight to create tension around the fact that Yeezy is approaching.
Yeezy season approaching, fuck whatever y'all been hearing, fuck whatever y'all been wearing, a monster about to come alive again. Soon as I pull up.
With the opening lines of On Sight, we immediately realize that the aggressive, distorted musical environment is matched with Kanye's sharp, unabashed lyrics. He pronounces his presence and immediately tells everyone else to fuck off. This is our formal introduction to the album's central character, Yeezus, an out-of-control, materialistic narcissist who needs everything handed to him at a moment's notice. As we detailed last episode, Kanye crafts his albums like stories or movies, and through Yeezus, a fictionalized, hyperbolic version of himself, Kanye will explore his own perspective and flaws and attempt to make sense of himself and the world around him. This season, we're going to examine the lyrics of Yeezus through the lens of a well-known narrative formula called the hero's journey, which is the go-to formula for most contemporary movies. Popularized by Joseph Campbell, the hero's journey follows a pretty basic three-act formula. We actually have evidence that Kanye conceptualizes his albums in acts, as his handwritten tracklist for The Life of Pablo he shared on the internet organized the songs into three acts just like the hero's journey. Narratively, the hero's journey begins by presenting the audience with a protagonist who lives a certain kind of life, but is then called to adventure. Along their journey, the hero encounters many obstacles and enemies. At some point, they experience a setback that triggers regressive behaviors, but ultimately, the hero overcomes their demons, completes their mission, and returns home, reborn. Yeezus starts in a place of ego and indulgence, thinking he's almighty and powerful. Song by song, this self-perception is challenged as our hero confronts a series of harsh truths. By the end, what Yeezus thought was least important ends up being what he needs the most. The hero's journey consists of roughly 10 stages, which we'll refer to throughout the season. The first stage is known as the ordinary world stage, which introduces the character living in their natural element. In order for growth to occur, the protagonist needs to be living in a regressed state out of which they must break. Think of Neo in The Matrix. Neo is a drone at his office job in the ordinary world, which is a lifeless, colorless, sterile environment, essentially the polar opposite of the Matrix world he chooses to enter, where everything buzzes and everyone challenges him. This concept of the ordinary world and establishing a character's natural element is exactly what we find in the opening moments of On Sight.
Yeezy season approaching, fuck whatever y'all been hearing, fuck whatever y'all been wearing, a monster about to come alive again, soon as I pull up in park.
Kanye begins the album rapping, Yeezy season approaching, fuck whatever y'all been hearing, fuck whatever y'all been wearing, a monster about to come alive again. There's tremendous ego in categorizing your appearance as an entire season. A season is all-encompassing. Everyone exists, for example, within summer, within winter. The season affects everything we do, when we do it, and how. That sense of power and authority comes through with Yeezus dismissing not just what everyone's listening to, but what they're wearing. This gives a secondary context to Yeezy season approaching, as it prophetically nods to Kanye's future Yeezy Season 1, his first fashion line with Adidas released in 2015, 2 years after Yeezus. By describing himself as a monster, Kanye demonstrates an awareness of his own behavior. There's a sense of prideful rebellion in these opening remarks. He isn't a hero or simply a villain. He's something far darker. It's also hard to hear the line, "a monster about to come alive again," and not to think of Kanye's track Monster from his previous album Twisted Fantasy. It was there that Kanye demonstrated how the wealth and excess of celebrity not only dehumanizes you, but makes you into something destructive and ferocious.
Gossip, gossip, nigga, just stop it. Everybody know I'm a motherfucking monster. I'ma need to see your fucking hands at the concert.
While Twisted Fantasy found Kanye attempting to distance himself from his inner monster, Yeezus is what happens when one decides to fully embrace it. Also, given that the character's name is a play on Jesus Christ, a monster coming back to life alludes to resurrection. But rather than a physical embodiment of God's word, Yeezus is framing himself as diabolical, closer to an antichrist than Christ himself. Having introduced himself in the album's opening lines, we'll now witness Yeezus in his natural habitat.
A monster about to come alive again. Soon as I pull up and park the Benz, we get this bitch shaking like Parkinson's. Take my number and lock it in. Indian hair, no moccasins. It's too many hoes in this house of sin.
Kanye raps, "Soon as I pull up and park the Benz, we get this bitch shaking like Parkinson's." The characterization of Yeezus continues, except now we're seeing him out and about in the world. He's pulled up to a club or some kind of nightlife haunt in a luxury car. He immediately mocks Parkinson's, a central nervous system disorder that causes a person's limbs to tremble. It's a callous line that swiftly shows just how big of a monster Yeezus is. The next line, "take my number and lock it in," puts us more firmly in a scene, as if we're in a movie. You can imagine Yeezus having entered the club, then cut to a shot of him talking to a woman. This further shows Yeezus' position of authority. He's not trying to get the girl's number. He demands that she get his. Given that we just heard Kanye reference the song Monster, it's likely these lines about giving out phone numbers in a club is also a callback to Kanye's verse in that song. It was there Kanye bragged, "Chick came up to me and said, this is the number to dial. If you want to make your number one, you're number two now." By referencing his monstrous ways of the past, Kanye is confirming his claim here on Site that the monster is indeed alive again. The following line characterizes the kind of girl he's talking to. She has Indian hair, no moccasins. For weaves, hair from Indian women is considered high quality. No moccasins callously plays on the common confusion between people from the country of India and Native Americans. Specifically, the word moccasin comes from the Algonquian language Powhatan, but became the common word to refer to any type of Native American sewn footwear. The word stuck simply because these were the first Native Americans to have contact with white settlers, so moccasin is actually a gross generalization, something we suspect Yeezus has no problem doing. Having zoomed in to see what's happening in the club, Kanye then takes a step back and provides a broader view, a summarizing statement of what he sees around him. He says, "It's too many hoes in this house of sin." While Kanye is condemning Yeezus' behavior by painting him as a monster, he positions the people around Yeezus as vacuous souls as well. This leads us into the conclusion of verse 1.
It's too many hoes in this house of sin. Real nigga back in the house again. Black Timbs all on your couch again. Black dick all in your spouse again. And I know she like chocolate men. She got more niggas off than Cochran, huh?
Kanye continues rapping another statement of ego. Real N-word back in the house again. At first, this line seems to tie back to the house of sin line, framing Yeezus as a masculine man who has returned to this house of sin to do sinful things. But the next line, "Black Tim's all on your couch again," makes the scene more domestic and personal. The line references the infamous story told by Charlie Murphy on Chappelle's Show, where the singer Rick James destroyed Eddie Murphy's couch with muddy shoes.
"Fuck your couch, nigga. Buy another one, you rich motherfucker. Fuck your couch, nigga. Fuck your couch."
This is actually a common tactic employed by Kanye. He often embodies comedically over-the-top characters from sitcoms and sketch shows, ironically. Within the story, Yeezus finds power in stomping his black Timbs into the couch. But we as the audience can recall the sketch from Chappelle's Show and know it's ridiculous. So where Yeezus is seemingly exerting dominance in the club, we know from cultural context that Kanye means to paint the character differently. When we have that insight in mind, it reveals Yeezus to be unaware, reckless, and out of touch. Kanye then one-ups himself, rapping, "Black dick all on your spouse again." While the previous line was humorous in its reference, the humor drains from the moment as you imagine Yeezus sleeping with someone else's wife. The monster is alive and thriving. Kanye finishes the verse with more descriptions about the wife, quote, "And I know she liked chocolate men. She got more N-words off than Cochran." The reference here is Johnny Cochran, the lawyer who convinced a jury not to convict O.J. Simpson for double homicide. The prowess and ability of Cochran as a lawyer to get black men off is compared to the wife's ability to sexually gratify black men. Cleverly, the name Cochran contains the word cock. Much like the Parkinson's joke earlier, Kanye is mixing humor with transgression. Given Kanye's new romantic involvement with Kim Kardashian at the time, the Johnny Cochran reference likely nods to Kim, whose father Robert Kardashian worked with Cochran on the O.J. Simpson case. Kim has a track record of dating black men, so the specific reference to black men feels like a purposeful, playful jab. As Onsite continues, we move on to the closest thing the song has to a hook. That's right after the break. Welcome back to Dissect. Before the break, we discussed the opening verse of Onsite, which introduced us to the album's maniacal protagonist, Yeezus. As the track continues, we get a repetition of the song's title and the closest thing it has to a refrain or a hook. It's here we can circle back to our discussion of Onsite's production, where we detailed how the track subverts what we expect from a traditional song. We talked about the rhythmic and harmonic dissonance, and now hearing the closest thing Onsite has to a refrain or a hook, we can point out the missing final component of the track, melody. In most songs, the hook or chorus is where you typically find melody really accentuated. It's usually catchy and memorable, something you can sing along to. We can once again use Kanye's previous album, Twisted Fantasy, as an example. Here's All of the Lights, a track that features a wealth of high-profile singers like Rihanna, Elton John, and others singing the melody of the hook. The melody is clear and repeatable, and is backed by the most developed, loudest part of the song's production. A melody is a song's calling card in a way. It's the thing that imprints into our brains, and we find ourselves singing it hours or days after hearing it. Onsite has absolutely no melody. The only thing that resembles a hook or a refrain is Kanye repeating the phrase Onsite, which is slang for immediately and is typically used to describe fighting someone the very moment you see them next. This perfectly describes the confrontational mindset of Yeezus. The character has an on-site attitude, ready to fight anyone that undermines his authority. It also reflects his lack of introspection. He's only focused on what's immediate, on what's right in front of him in the moment. Recall the song opened with Yeezus saying, "Fuck whatever y'all been hearing, fuck whatever y'all been wearing." He doesn't care how things have been, only what they are now that he's here. That immediacy is captured and further developed in the lines, "How much do I not give a fuck? Let me show you right now before you give it up." As quickly as Yeezus will sleep with your girl, he also cares so little about it he'd move on without a care. But the context of this line changes dramatically with what comes next, as Kanye breaks the fourth wall and we realize that he's talking directly to us. He knows the sound of Onsite thus far would be off-putting to many people. So before we give it up or turn it off in disgust, Kanye has something to show us. How much do I not give a fuck? Let me show you right now before you give it up. In what, in my opinion, is one of the most brilliant musical moments of the past decade, Kanye pulls the rug out from under us and suddenly drops an entirely new contrasting soundscape. It's a pitched-up version of a song called "He'll Give Us What We Really Need" by Holy Name of Mary Choral Family. While the original version of Onsite sampled this track directly, Def Jam couldn't obtain the rights to use the recording of the song, and so what we hear on Onsite is actually a remake. But despite this technicality, it functions as a sample, and it's reminiscent of Kanye's trademark pitched-up soul samples that comprise the majority of his early discography. In this way, the lyrics the choir sings are incredibly ironic. "He'll give us what we need, it may not be what we want." In very meta fashion, Kanye is using the sample to comment on On-Site and Yeezus as a whole. As we said, Kanye knew the sound of the album would be challenging to many listeners and outright appalling to others. The choir sample here is everything we want from Kanye. It gives us a straightforward rhythm, beautiful harmonies, and a catchy melody. All the musical components we expect, all the components Kanye has given us in the past, and all the components Kanye purposely subverts here on On-Site. The sample is Kanye reminding us he knows what we want, and he could give us that if he wanted. He could have very easily created an entire song around this sample. But just as he warned us before the sample drops, he doesn't give a fuck. And the sample is Kanye's antagonizing middle finger waving in all of our faces.
Certain, you know, songs that are blatant, you know, radio hits, it's like I'm speaking with today's textures. And that's, you know, and you look, if you look at it 200 years from now, it's not going to stand out in the way that, you know, 808s or Yeezus stands out and completely can push or redefine or make people say, you know, hey, I completely hate that or I completely love that, but let me just think differently because everybody is like bound to these, you know, no pun intended, they're bound to 16 bars and 8 bars and, you know, the normal radio thing. I was talking to Frank Ocean about this and said, like, you know, my mom got arrested for the sit-ins, and now we're more like the sit-outs, like sit off of radio, and say, hey, radio, come to us.
You know,
we need to find something new because it's being, you know, controlled in a way and manufactured in a way that, you know, really awesome, you know, artists, you know, can make amazing music and not break as far past as like something that's very like formulaic.
Well, the sample serves to remind us what Kanye the artist is not giving us with this album. Within the context of the album's narrative, it actually serves another function. On-Site has been, up until this point, an unrelenting wave of ego and aggression. Now there's a sudden intrusion of much brighter music. Imagine for a second a painter who wants to contrast beauty and ugliness. One simple way of achieving this goal is to put bright colors next to dark colors. Maybe a vibrant garden sits in the midst of an empty playground where the swings and jungle gym are rusted and ruined. If you're a musician who wants to capture the same juxtaposition, what could you do? To this end, Kanye sets the harshness of On-Site and the Yeezus character against a moment of gospel music. In the moment, the he of the sampled lyrics, he'll give us what we need, it may not be what we want, refers to Yeezus' defiant ego and all-knowing attitude. But given the sample comes from a gospel song, we know the he refers to the capitalized he, God. Again, in the moment, Yeezus is comparing himself to Jesus. But if we take a more meta view, we realize that Kanye the artist is using the sample to foreshadow things to come. It's God who will give us what we need. Much in the same way a TV show will foreshadow something in the first episode that won't happen until the season finale, Yeezus, as a narrative album, uses that same technique. This becomes even more clear if we take a look at other lyrics throughout He'll Give Us What We Really Need, which in the context of Yeezus, read like divine commentary on the Yeezus character. The choir member here sings, "The time has come for we must learn to be more patient in our lives. We want, we need, and wait. We want more. We pray for our desires." After a verse in which Yeezus brags about material goods and women, it feels like an astute critique of his endless desire for immediate gratification and surface-level pleasure. Verse 2 of the song continues this theme, as it reads, "When we pray, we just can't wait. We tend to lose our self-control. But you know, good things come to those who do. The faith in God is oh so true." Again, losing one's self-control when their immediate demands are unfulfilled can be heard as commentary on Yeezus' confrontational and aggressive behavior as he pursues what he thinks he needs. The song's outro drives the point home, reading, "We want so many things, things that we don't really need, diamond rings and everything. We said, oh Lord, please, I want a car, a brand new car. You know I want more money. I'm begging you, Lord, just let me win the lottery." And so just as fast as Yeezus is established as an ego-fueled megalomaniac, Kanye the artist uses the song's sample as meta-narrative commentary to provide insight into the character's flaws and reveals what he's missing. And what's missing is hidden in plain sight. It's in the very name Yeezus, Yeezus needs Jesus. He needs God. Of course, all these layers aren't discernible in real time, and on the surface, the sample interlude doesn't make a lot of sense in the context of On Sight, and it's not supposed to. It's merely a hint of things to come. This is why as suddenly as the sample appears, it disappears, and we're back to dramatic, overbearing synths and Yeezus telling us about his life.
Baby girl try and get a nut, and a girl try and give it up. Chop them both down, don't judge them, Joe Brown.
Kanye begins the second verse rapping, baby girl trying to get a nut, and a girl trying to give it up. This recalls a familiar scene in the club. A girl doesn't want to approach the celebrity she's been eyeing across the room. Instead, her friend is the one who acts as a go-between. The result here is that Yeezus, quote, chopped them both down, which is a euphemism for Yeezus having a threesome with the two women. He continues rapping, don't judge him, Joe Brown, citing the reality courtroom TV star. It's an unexpected moment that we might consider compassion, as Yeezus requests that these women shouldn't be judged for the threesome, for the sinful lives that they lead in the club. The irony is that they're living the same life as Yeezus, so we could read the plea to Judge Brown as symbolic of his not wanting to be judged for his own actions. But recall the interlude was a reference to God being aware of our actions and giving us what we need, not what we want. So whether Yeezus knows it or not, someone's judging someone. The line also calls back to the first verse's reference to the lawyer Johnny Cochran. Where Cochran was pleading for Simpson's innocence, now Yeezus plays lawyer for the women.
Chop them both down. Don't judge them, Joe Brown. One last announcement. No sports brawl, let's keep it bouncing. Everybody wanna live at the top of the mountain. Took it to the blue, try to sip the fountain. That's what David
Grubman. Yeezus declares, one last announcement. No sports brawl, let's keep it bouncing. Everybody wanna live at the top of the mountain. Took her to the blue. It's typical for people who are out clubbing to go to multiple venues in a night rather than spending all their time in one place. You can imagine Yeezus here, in the club, announcing to everyone with him that they need to bounce somewhere else. Specifically, the club Kanye cites is Blue, short for the Fountain Blue Club in Miami Beach. Kanye choosing a sports bra as a metaphor for bouncing or leaving continues the motif of women being nothing more than sexual objects to Yeezus, as a sports bra is used to add support for women. The line, everybody want to live at the top of the mountain, is most likely using a mountain as a metaphor for wealth and fame, where the majority are at the bottom and a lucky few are at the top. According to Yeezus, everyone wants the life of wealth and fame he has, which is why these women are so eager to sleep with him. Both parties are using each other for their own gain, neither are looking for anything sustainable, just what serves their primal desires in the moment. It's very likely the line also references one of Kanye's favorite movies, The Holy Mountain by Alejandro Jodorowsky. On the Yeezus tour, Kanye would frequently mention Jodorowsky as an artist underappreciated in his time. During the Yeezus era, Kanye traveled to meet Jodorowsky in person, and many have compared the stage props of the Yeezus tour to the imagery in the Holy Mountain film. Most obviously, the tour's centerpiece was an enormous mountain. The film itself is full of abstract imagery and deep symbolism. The plot centers on a thief who fittingly is a Jesus Christ lookalike, something also featured in the Yeezus tour narrative. The thief and nine others go on a journey to reach nine immortals who live at the top of a holy mountain. It's there they expect to receive the secret to immortality, but the thief is ultimately denied access to the peak of the mountain. Instead, he descends back down the mountain, gets married, and is able to find happiness in life's simple pleasures. And the ones that did reach the mountaintop, the message they receive is this, quote, we came in search of the secret of immortality, to be like gods. And here we are, mortals, more human than ever. Goodbye to the holy mountain. Real life awaits us, unquote. And it's here that Kanye's line, everybody want to live at the top of the mountain, becomes more than a reference to the women using Yeezus for his life of excess. Like the gospel sample, the reference to Holy Mountain and its plot of humans trying to become gods is another foreshadowing of the story of Yeezus, the character who will just in a few songs declare himself a god. His pursuit of power will ultimately crumble, and like the Jesus-looking thief of Holy Mountain, It's love that will redeem him in the end.
One last announcement. No sports ball, let's keep it bouncing. Everybody wanna live at the top of the mountain. Took her to the blue straw, sipped the fountain. That's when David Gutman kicked the air. But I got her back in and put my dick in her mouth. On site.
The second verse of On Site ends with a less than glamorous scene. While at the Fountain Blue Club, Kanye tells us, she tried to sip the fountain. That's when David Gutman kicked her out. Here it appears that the fountain that the woman was trying to sip out of at Fountain Blue is actually Yeezus' dick, and David Gutman, the owner of Live Club inside Fountain Blue, kicked the woman out for this. Not to be overridden, Yeezus gets the last laugh, rapping, "But I got her back in and put my dick in her mouth." Kanye himself breaks the fourth wall here again, as he's unable to control his laughing at the absurdity of this line. But we have to point out, in terms of the development of the Yeezus character, this final scene displays the transactional nature of this relationship. This woman wants access to the top of the mountain, to go to the blue, to live wild and carefree. And when she's with Yeezus, she can. But the cost is sex. Something that's so intimate and meaningful has been rendered as nothing more than the price of admission. What this woman gains isn't motivation or self-empowerment. Instead, she simply takes another backward step up the ladder of infamy. Yeezus isn't a hero, rescuing a damsel in distress. He isn't inspiring anyone to overcome. He's using his power to satisfy his own desires and enabling a hollowing of morality.
On sight. Right now. I need right now. Right now. I need right now.
The outro confirms the short-term thinking of Yeezus. He repeats, "Right now, I need right now." He demands his demands are fulfilled at a moment's notice. But given the sampled interlude that sings, "He'll give us what we need," this outro is also one final bit of foreshadowing that our Yeezus character is in need of something. Something that will be revealed as the story goes on and we get a peek beneath the egotism on the surface of our protagonist. Musically, Kanye's fragmented and frantic delivery is reinforced by the song's production, which completely unravels here at the end. Any semblance of tonal and rhythmic stability the song contained is obliterated. The drums stop completely except for a number of displaced snare drum rolls. The synth riff decomposes into scattered bits of distorted darts, and Kanye West's middle finger grows longer and longer and longer. Conclusions. On Site establishes our protagonist Yeezus as an absolute maniac, monstrous in its arrogance, indulgence, and irreverence, living completely caught up in the hedonism of the moment. Just like the hero's journey's ordinary world stage, it's important for Kanye to establish upfront the core character of Yeezus and where and how he exists most comfortably. This foundation gives us an initial point of reference for the external adventure and the internal journey that's about to take place. This is why On Site starts the album rather than Blood on the Leaves. To properly set up the narrative, Kanye needs to give us the full, ugly, complicated picture of Yeezus. The visceral reaction we get from the distorted synthesizer that opens the album mirrors the character's brash, middle fingers in the air entrance in the club. As we've now been introduced to Yeezus and his ordinary world, the next step in the hero's journey is the call to adventure, the reason the protagonist leaves his natural habitat. This is the moment Gandalf asks Frodo to leave the Shire to help destroy a ring, or Simba decides to go see an elephant graveyard. What cause is worthy enough to get a narcissist like Yeezus to leave the club and go on an adventure? The album's next song has the answer, and it's not one you'd expect.
For my theme song, like my leather black jeans on, like my by any means on, partin' I'm getting my scream on.
Of course, this is Yeezus' next song, Black Skinhead, a track we'll examine note by note, line by line, next time on Dissect. Today's episode was written by Travis Bean, Chris Lambert, and me. If you enjoyed today's episode, please tell a friend about the show or share on social media. It really helps. Theme music for the show was composed by Bureaucratic. Audio editing by Eric Bass and me. Song recreations by Andrew Atwood. Be sure to follow us on social media at Dissect Podcast and check out our limited season 8 merchandise on our website, dissectpodcast.com. If you want even more episodes on Kanye, listen to season 2 of this podcast, a 16-episode analysis of My Beautiful Dark Twisted Fantasy. Okay, thanks everyone. Talk to you next time.